Log Talk Radio.
Today we're going to talk about history, a little more history, history of time. We've got a special guest, Rick Cadet, from over in the London area. And then, if time allows, we'll get into a bit of some of the writing of Andy P. Hall. We'll love him. And got some material for the Lost Keys of Freebie Street. Entered a press, and I dusted off a copy of the History of Freemasonry in Canada, Club 1, here of 18. Anyway, see what kind of mischief we can get into today. I there's always things that I notice, just like both of you, all of you, both of you, I should say, both of us. And by the way, we're getting over 3,000 hits on this radio program. So I can't tell you how grateful I am, and how much I hope that this conversation contributes to our understanding of improved work as Freemasons. That is the point. We're all in this together. But that response, I don't know what to say. Except all I have to offer is let's move this thing forward. I think I've noticed a few things, like I usually do since we last spoke. And I think I'm trying to always find threads with our ancients, and always struggling to answer the question, like, what are we? And I began to think that, notice that we seem to, the work, everything about us seems to be contemplative. And I think the appeal, as we say, it's not necessarily for everybody, but the appeal is there for people that are more contemplative than the gregarious types. This is a fraternity where we stop for a moment and think. And it's not to say every man doesn't have that capability, but we give cause, we give reason to do that when we're together, when we approach the work. It's a thoughtful analysis of the meaning. Nothing really attracts or has appeal to us unless it has meaning. And there we go searching for it together. Because it tends to be an enormously complicated question. And there's so many perspectives. We learn greatly from the perspective of each other. That's why I think when I'm with you, and around you. I hope that you feel that I'm always trying to prompt and listen carefully to what you have to say, because it helps me better understand my own ideas. Our ideas and perspectives are always a bit different. And when we converge, it's wonderful. When we don't, it's not necessarily adversarial or conflict. It's simply that we see things a little differently. And if I keep my mind open, if Masons keep their minds open, we have the risk of learning from one another. So I'm going to keep that in mind as we press on today. Here we are, the 322nd day of the year. 322nd day. We only have, I hope you're all excited and putting on your best druid robes. We are 33 days from the winter solstice. We'll talk a little bit about that later. 35 days from Christmas. There we go. Did you know? Here's a few things I'm sure you all know. Snowflakes are the size of a red blood cell. Let me see, work that into the conversation. I'm going to give you a few other things you can work into your conversation so that, you know, they think, people around you think that you're from Mensa. I know all of you are with Mensa, except me. I never learned how to spell it. Did you folks know that the English football manager, Roy Hodgson, is listed in the acknowledgement of Sebastian Falk's novel A Week in December? I didn't know that. Did you know that using Skype, what I dial through to speak with you today, carries a 15-year jail term in Ethiopia? Really, I don't think it's that difficult. By some estimates, around 400,000 people travel to the United States every year for medical treatment. 400,000. This year's U.S. elections were the most expensive in history. Total cost, presidential, state, congressional, and municipal campaigns is estimated to be in the area of $8 billion. We thrive on education. Here's some interesting bit of news. Brazil will reduce prisoner sentences by 4 days for every book they read. And you all know that the Portuguese footballer Ronaldo is named after Ronald Reagan. You knew that. Of course you knew that. We have, did you also know that bras date back around 600 years? It's hard to work that one into a conversation around Masonic lodges. The oldest ones, though, were discovered in an Austrian castle. There you go. In case you ever wondered, crosses your mind someday. Seagulls don't actually exist. It's a casual term used to refer to the gull family. There's about 25 different versions of that. Did you know women in Britain are among the shortest in Europe? And on average, they wear a high heel 3.3 inches high. Did you know the mayor, if you've written to the mayor of Talkeen, Alaska, the cat called Stubbs. He's held the position for the past 15 years. I think I'm feeling good about that. Tippi Hedren, who starred in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, has a cat called Johnny Depp. Did you know that climbers can use smartphones to keep in touch from the top of Mount Everest, where there's been a 3G mobile service since the end of 2010? The world becoming a little smaller? I hope so. I hope so. Smaller, if smaller means familiar, then that's a good thing. I want to help us with a little bit of perspective on time. And for those of you who have an interest in doing a little bit of reading, there's a new book out by a writer by the name of Hammond. And it's called Claudia Hammond. And it's a book called Time Warped, Warped. And it's not a very expensive bit of material, but it is it's a fascinating read. And one of the reasons that I picked up on this topic again on time was because of the unique way that Ms. Hammond is she's a broadcaster in Britain, I think. And she explores the subject of time very thoroughly. And she reminds us that that our perception of time seems to speed up or slow down. She talks about the skydiver Chuck Berry, whose parachute failed, and the journalist Alan Johnston's experience being taken hostage as an example of how time expands, it seems to slow down with near-death situations. And she talks about the speleologist, Michel Seffre, who spent 2 months in an underground cave in France to find out how much our sense of time is thrown without external cues. And then she adds a bit about, you know, an eccentric fellow that I'll say, who takes a photograph every 20 seconds of his life so that his entire life can be recalled. But the main thing that really fascinated me was this notion about human failing, always believing that we have more free time in the future. And she has a little test in the book that's kind of interesting. You may like it. About half the population believe time is moving towards them rather than them moving through time. So you can take the test. It's interesting to see which you are. I won't give away the trade secrets on that one. But this is no cure for the sensation of time accelerating as years passed. Even the author claims that time rushing is a sign of leading a busy, happy life. And it may be true, but is as unsatisfying as the feeling of sand slipping through an hourglass. Thoughtful book you might like. We're doing well here. Just to put some perspective on you and me today and on masonry. And I think this is kind of interesting. I'm trying to pull out the most recent science here. We've been around, they found pre-human remains, Ardipithecus, from 5.5 million years ago. That's pre-humans, pre-humanoid. The universe, how old is the universe? Now, depending on what you look at for in terms of measure, if we look at chemical clusters, or we look at the oldest star clusters, or the oldest white dwarf star, we can approximate somewhere between 8 and 11 billion years. That's the whole universe. Now, Earth is approximated at 4.54 billion years old. That comes from a reference from nature.nps, if you're curious. Us, how old is us, modern man, where we start to see shape and you look at that ancient creature and say, yeah, it looks like you and me in a way. 276,000 years. Now, let's put some perspective on this. One of the most successful animals lasted over 100 million years, and they're gone. Dinosaurs. 100 million years, and they're gone. Modern man, 276,000 years. You do the math. Maybe we can project ourselves, you know, we can begin to speculate on what it takes to survive. That kind of comparison, I think, reveals a lot about our sense of importance or sense of purpose or our sense of command. Where is it that we're heading? I think thoughtful people might stop and just rethink where we're going. But I wanted to ask a larger question. How old is time? like the whole idea. Before time was measured, mankind had this notion of a gain and a gain. We would go through a sleep and eat and hunt, and then the next, and then a darkness, and then a gain. If the Judeo-Christian kind of an outlook on the world, and we know certainly this isn't the definitive, but is somewhere between 5.7 and 10,000 years ago. But then if we stop and think about it for a moment, if God created the universe, then time existed before that, or did it? It's a hard one. I'm not even sure, again, what time is, but we know that the earliest measurements were shadow clocks. The Egyptians thought that they discovered it, measuring the length of a shadow from a pointed stick. But at about the same time, we know that the Chinese and Babylonians and Greeks and Romans were measuring it. They used sundials, just a different device. But we have to give credit, it was the Egyptians that created the first 24-hour day. A little bit of tweak on that. The first night was divided into 12 hours, and the day was divided into 10 hours. But then we added twilight. Twilight was the hour before dawn and the hour after sunset. And then, of course, that wasn't good enough because people like you and me sat there and were looking around one night and said, you notice that sun sets in a different position this time of year than it does in that time of year? And of course, that led us to wondering what was going on, and we started to notice, predict, and try and conceptualize how this was happening, came up with notions of orbit, notions of what? This Earth spinning around a central axis and actually tilting. So in just a couple of days, 35 days, we're coming up to winter solstice, shortest day of the year. That's on December 22nd, 12:30 a.m. Happens to be my wedding anniversary. I think there's a message in that for me. What'll it be now? 38 years? I'll get back to you next year. but it's when the sun is reaching the southernmost position over the northern hemisphere. It's when it's lowest on the horizon. The good news is the sun starts northward right after that. The days get a little longer. But now I'm going to try and create a bit of technical wizardry here. And if at all possible, I'm going to try and tie in with our guest, Rick Cadet. And I'm going to have to try and figure out if I'm putting us all on hold or if we're moving ahead. So let me know. Through the wizardry here, I'm going to get Rick to hang up, and I'm going to call him again. Because we just have to, bring him in to this show so that you and I can listen to his wonderful anecdotes and take it from there. Here we go. This is 15 years prison for me in Ethiopia for this.
Hello,
Brother Cadet. How are you?
Hello, Dale.
And we're sitting here with a cast of thousands out there in the ether listening to us. So thank you for doing that. I just had to reroute the call back. And perhaps if you don't mind, we can just start with a bit of an introduction about this fine man. I know you as a senior warden of a lodge and yes. as a member of a Committee on Masonic Education and very dedicated and enthusiastic fellow. What part of the world are you from?
I'm from St. Thomas District. Mm-hmm. That's about 30 minutes south of London.
And how many lodges are involved in that district?
My district, we have 10 lodges. Mine's in Port Stanley, a nice little hamlet right on the lake.
Ah, so not too far away from how far are you from London in Port Stanley?
It takes me about 35 minutes from my home to my lodge.
Okay, that gives us a bit of an idea. You've been, how long have you been a Mason?
6 years.
6 years. Anything in particular draw you to the craft?
Curiosity, and it was actually a fellow who was doing some maintenance in my apartment at the time. We got chit-chatting, and turned out he was a Mason, and I found out so was my neighbor, who ended up being my sponsor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm a first-generation Mason.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. As far as you know.
As far as I know.
Now,
no
you've
one's so bored.
you've been a Mason, so 5-6 years, something like
yes.
that? What's if you don't mind, would you care to offer an opinion on your expectations of the craft at 5 years? Has it come close to meeting your expectations?
Well, my expectations are my own expectations, which are to make myself better, which so far I've been pretty lucky in doing, and to spread what I've learned to other Masons around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I constantly learn from those people as well, new or old.
Does the fact that we're such an old organization cause additional challenges for us, do you think?
Nope, that just means I have a large pool of information and education experience to draw from, and hopefully someday I'll be part of that pool and someone else draws something from me.
Huh?
Like, it's a great tradition to be part of.
Do you think the craft is evolving over the years?
In my short years, yes. Slowly, but yes, it is evolving. We've got a lot of people who are within who want the change. You know, we all experience stumbling blocks, but people are getting around it slow by slow, and our leadership is starting to do the same.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that in some areas we have a thought that, you know, and I've had this thought many times myself. There's some things that are really wonderful or charming or interesting, and we always maybe I get nostalgic and think I wish that would never change. But in the same instance, as soon as I say it, I know that everything changes, everything grows and evolves. Do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that sense of change, as you heard, you were listening in on our sense of time and this feeling that it can either go slow or it can accelerate on us. It's a perceptual kind of thing. Do you think that our sense of time changing is accelerating? Or do you think do you think what we're going through right now is would be similar to what people, Masons, went through 100 years ago? That things were seeming to go fast and change was happening. Do you think that's similar or any different today?
My personal opinion is we as human beings, we do not like change. We're creatures of habit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going through change probably similar to what they have many, many years ago. We just don't hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
We probably hear more negative than positive, unless the positive is big and sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Baby steps, we do get there, and people are starting to realize that change is a positive thing, and we are moving forward slowly.
Now, Rick, one of the things that we have today, our children are grown up with it, that we didn't have 100 years ago, is social media. And it's
right.
Even today, we're talking to an audience out there through the internet. What changes would you consider is happening to our craft because of the change in the way we communicate?
What changes?
Mm-hmm.
Aside from information getting out there quicker and to more people, I think that also makes more people more informed about what's going on. Just for example, I'll have to see the numbers, but I'm pretty sure there's probably more people at Grand Lodge now than there were, you know, 30 years plus.
Now,
more people hearing about it.
Do you mind, you know, when we're not talking in front of an audience of a few thousand people, I want to bring up a point that was on my mind. Do you think that our sense of privacy and confidentiality will be changing so that we can preserve things, but still, you know, the way we think about privacy is it's like a hot button today. What do you think?
I think from the privacy standpoint, we're actually relaxing those rules and requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my dog's getting out of hand.
No. I know you as a fairly, I'll call you a neoconservative kind of a Freemason, forward-thinking, but fairly protective of the ancient landmarks. Do you think we can move forward? Do you have any hesitation about preserving our landmarks and our ancient secrets?
I have no problem with preserving them. Personally, I think they probably should be more defined. I think it's probably something that I believe we kind of lack in our jurisdiction is the definition of. And I've been asked by a lot of people, what are the landmarks?
Mm-hmm.
And we can go through a few books and look at what landmarks are in a few different jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in essence, then to the core, they are relatively the same.
You know, there's an upside to that in a way. If our notion of the ancient landmarks are a product of discussion and research at the time, it's really difficult for us to reveal them to anybody. Because it's like, depends. The answer to what they are depends, as you say. It's not clearly defined as it might be in another jurisdiction.
Well, they're published in a lot of jurisdictions, so you really can't protect them from the secrecy standpoint. They're out there.
How do you handle that? Like now, you know, if anybody really wanted to drill down into things Masonic, they can have access to it. Do you feel any like there's a boundary being crossed with sort of people having that kind of accessibility?
I'm sorry, I have to repeat the question.
People can research on the internet just about anything, including
right.
Research. Do you think it's crossing a boundary?
No, actually, I don't think it is crossing a boundary. I mean, as far as some information that is out there, which would never have been out there 50-plus years ago, but it's getting us better access to probably what Masons should know, especially what's within their lodges, and getting information out there faster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're really crossing boundaries. There's always the exception. But I mean, as far as information getting out that should not be out there, I think that barrier was broken back in the 1700s.
Do you think? How so?
Masonry Dissected, I believe that's the one.
Right.
He divulged a lot of what happens within the degrees over the years.
Right.
Someone sat in lodge and he put pen to paper and put it out there in the form of a book.
I've often thought it's kind of ironic in a way, because without that material, we wouldn't have a lot of reference.
True.
To the violation at the time. Hmm?
Yeah.
We've always had an oral tradition. History passed from mouth to ear. And in some ways, I think that still goes on. Do you have any sense of the challenges that we're facing in the 21st century, just globally as Freemasons?
I don't think there's that many challenges, other than the reluctance of the few, which create reluctance of the many.
Mm-hmm.
But I think communication is getting better, and it's probably the biggest hurdle many years ago. And it is actually, in my opinion, decreased a lot of the challenges out there. But I think the core group is we are looking for what we can do as individuals, mm-hmm. to ourselves, and then what we can do for our fellow man within Lodge.
What's the appeal of masonry to 21st century men?
Well, on a personal scale, I think a lot of people are probably a little less leaning towards organized religion, but you probably get a lot of the same as you would from your priest or minister as you would out of masonry. You get the same type of people, same type of attitude, same goals. You just want to be the best person you can be for your family, for your friends, and your coworkers.
So in a way, it's another route to that goal.
I think it's a route, but mm-hmm. without being organized, per se.
Ah. All right. You're thinking that with the changes in our population, we're unlike you, I'm getting older every day, and we have to always we're taught to prepare our lodges and always work toward the future.
Right.
Do you think we have enough discussion about what the challenges of the future will hold and how we should prepare for them?
Actually, I don't think we have enough. I think a lot of people, they do not want to see the change, or they're scared of what change might bring. Mm-hmm. They try to stop it in its tracks. So the younger people, they need to persevere and push the change, push that information, get it out there, do something with it, and let's move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Younger people who are going to continue our lodges for the next 20, 40, 60 years, and not those who won't be around for that long. So mm-hmm. we need to be progressive in that sense.
Now and do you think we are? How do you think we're doing with that?
I think there's a lot of room to grow, but we are getting better. I think a lot of the more experienced Masons start to see the younger generation, they're not in it just for themselves. They are in it for the good of the craft, and that what they're going to do is going to be better for the craft. So they're starting to let the reins go a little bit.
So the lessons are being passed on.
Absolutely.
It's curious that way. We have, in your lodge, just to go back for a moment, can you give us a rough idea about the size of your lodge, a little bit of detail, or how old it is?
My lodge was instituted in 1860. It's a small room, but we average a full house would be about 35 members and visitors, so that would be full sitting. And there's been a number of times where we've had to put out a few extra chairs, but I personally haven't seen anything less than 25 people. So we have a good showing.
Wow. And it's been there continuously since 1860.
Yes.
And you, I'm guessing here that membership is not too much of a stress or strain on you, on the lodge?
No, actually... And as far as the chair is concerned, there's no past masters, and I think we have about four or five in the wings waiting to step up.
Do you think membership?
More initiations coming.
Do you think membership around lodges, either at the local or district or Grand Lodge levels generally, is on a straight trajectory, or do you think it's more like a tide that comes and fluctuates, comes and goes?
I think it's improving, actually, from what I've seen personally. I can't speak for the other districts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some will experience a decline. We're experiencing it an increase, obviously. And I forgot what your question was.
Yeah. What's the appeal for you of your involvement, your additional involvement in Masonic education with the committee?
The appeal to me is being able to help others go through what I went through, which was educating themselves and having someone to fall back on if I, kind of have a few struggles.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy to be in that position to help those who can, and and communicate. I keep learning immensely from the mentors who also participate within the college.
Mm-hmm.
So anything they grade, I read their reports and I pick up a few things here and there as well. Actually, I pick up something all the time. So I'm, aside from completing my formal studies, I'm continuously learning, and I figured when I stop learning, then I'm going to step down.
It's almost like an unfair question to ask, you know, is there enough education and preparation for officers in the lodge? Because obviously we'd say, well, there never is enough. There's always, you know, something more we could do.
Oh, there's never enough.
Absolutely. It's always that little detail that you need to know. So it's, we're always in a position of growth and moving ahead.
It's no different than someone being in officer's chairs for 5, 6, 7 years, and when he finally gets to be master, mm-hmm. he still chokes on something or forgets something or doesn't do something. So you're always learning something. Someone's going to forget to tell you something or show you something.
How,
you learn on your feet.
How well do you think we're meeting the needs of our senior members of lodges?
I think in my jurisdiction, my lodge, mm-hmm. I think a lot of them are surprised by the people who are in the chairs right now. I don't think they held a lot of high hope for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but I see on their faces and through various conversations, they're quite pleasantly surprised with what's coming through the ranks.
So they've given you, kept their minds open and waited for you to sort of demonstrate the worth.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not necessarily a bad thing.
No, we've had a lot of people come through where they've done their thing,
mm-hmm.
and they've pleased the membership, and we've had a really good crew go through, and I got a really good crew behind me, so great continuity going.
The power invested in me because I'm sitting on here in this chair asking the questions. If you could make a few changes to Freemasonry,
mm-hmm.
Just think about it for a second. I'll ask you this, not as if you're dissatisfied with anything about Freemasonry, but you know, if you were in charge of the world, What do you think you would want to change or enhance or bring to Freemasonry?
I can't say more efficient communication. I like to get communication out there to more people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who are not connected or they rely on one or two people to get them the information, and that person fails and they don't get the communication. So I like to get more information out to the individuals on a one-to-one basis.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have to start somewhere. If I start a newsletter, I send it to 5 people, they send it to 5 people, et cetera. You know, we're going to get a few thousand people.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's probably a few thousand other people who are not on any of those lists.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people I would like to reach.
So when you're talking, thinking about outreach or connections, you're really thinking about connecting with 44,000 Masons in Ontario.
Yes.
Amazing.
And I think that will make a big difference in our jurisdiction as to what goes on and how it's done. And I think our current leadership in our jurisdiction, I think they're doing a bang-up job and getting things going.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the recent past, they realized this. And, you know, just like everything else, Masonry, it's a slow movement. But it's amazing, especially this new website. Things are really coming around.
You're impressed with what you're seeing.
I'm sorry?
You're impressed with what you're seeing.
Absolutely. And I enjoy being part of it. So.
Fantastic.
So I think there's great potential. I'm sure somewhere down the line we'll find another avenue to improve on that. And the way leadership is looking right now, I think they're going to be open to those changes and they're going to be open to implementing them.
Man. Now, Rick, I know you're a busy dad. And I know how enthusiastic I am this time of year. The Toronto Maple Leafs have not lost a game yet this year.
Hoorah! I'll sit right next to you in the stands.
Yeah, really. And I can speak, I think, for all Maple Leaf fans everywhere in Ontario. I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you so very much for sharing your opinions and your insights with us about Freemasonry 5 years in. I'd love the opportunity to do this 5 years from now and compare notes, see where we go from here.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Doug. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And enjoy your show. I've been listening to it for a number of months now. Good job.
And to you and to all in Port Stanley and area, I hope the great architect of the universe watches over you and is kind to you. Cheers.
Thank you, Dale. And to you.
Now, brethren, we have an opportunity to listen to a fellow who's 5 years into the order and has done, as you can see here, I think it's really obvious that he's learning. He's kept his ears open, his eyes open, and he's on task. He seems to be quite quite caught up in the principles and the value and the opportunities of Freemasonry. I think Rick Cadet is also an example of the industriousness of Freemasonry that's happening in lodges and districts all over Ontario. I sometimes think of our fraternity, if we look at it as a great website and use the great work site and use the analogy of the cathedrals, you know, our constant reference to the lodge and to masonry and to geometry. I think it's reasonable to say that that we're an industrious group, and it's like when and the magic that's in Freemasonry isn't in the sense that we're unproductive. I'd say exactly opposite. We have taken on an enormously complicated task, and I don't think we should ever lose sight of that. The cathedrals that we build are not simple structures. They take a great deal of thought, and they have a bearing on the thought of humanity. We have a number of startups going on at any different time. Some of them gain traction. That's because just we embrace, I think, the scientific method. When we find a challenge, we try to find a solution. It doesn't mean we can pull perfection out of thin air. Nobody can. It means that we embrace trial and error, that we are unrelenting. We do not give up until we find something that does have traction and does have merit, and we think we can support it and move forward. So all of those conditions aren't always available all of the time. Those conditions come and go. So when you hear a brother talking about the value of continuity and historic connections, about principles and education, then you know that this is a fellow who is understanding the timelessness of Freemasonry, that he's actually, I think, stepping out of himself and his own period of time and connecting with the ancients. They prepared something for you and I. They handed on tools that they worked very hard to achieve, to refine. But they never told us necessarily what to do with those tools. They gave us some hints that these tools are enormously valuable. And we could see from their constructions what they were able to do with those tools. And the daunting part, perhaps, is they handed us tools and said, now it's your turn. Now you and the brethren, see if you can work and develop a single mind so that you too can create great things. The factional discussions are necessary when we're sorting out good ideas from better and best. But we have to do it in that sense always as gentlemen, and we can do it as vehemently with as much earnestness and commitment as we care to expose, but always with the gentility and understanding of common purpose of Freemasonry. That way, the effort it takes to achieve the single mind, is this the Francis Bacon? Did we agree on St. Paul's? Absolutely not. There were bitter arguments about the cost overrides. There were bitter arguments about the innovations that he was bringing. Who was this upstart architect slash engineer to come up with these concepts that had been untried before? weight-bearing engineering that was speculative. And what was he saying? He was saying, look, I know what I'm doing. Look at my track record. Look what I've produced. But was that single-minded? Well, at the end of every argument, each and every discussion, each and every pressure point, there was enough support that the great idea was respected and it prevailed. So today, you and I have the bear witness to wonderfully amazing structures and wonderfully powerful statements of ingenuity. And I think if we look at one another and we stick together, that we are collectively capable of that kind of greatness. I tend to think that our potential is in our future, always. We have to work very, very hard to demonstrate that by producing the very best that we can. History will not be kind to us if we do otherwise. I don't think that Freemasonry is ever a footnote in history. We're never necessarily definitive, but we like to be, I think, and rightfully so, an influence for the betterment of humanity. That task, as you know, is not without its struggles and challenges and perils. So I'm going to move on here with the next few minutes that we have together today. And I want to again thank Rick for putting himself out there to you and to the world, and to share some of his insights and ideas. And as he is so careful to remind us, it was opinion. Wonderful. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about writing from a fellow, Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall, of course, was born in Canada, and then he went down to California, and he spent a lot of his time down there. He was a fairly young man when he was writing on things Masonic and esoteric. And if some of you care, I've got a copy of a book by McCoy Publishing and Masonic Supply from Richmond, Virginia, sitting in front of me. And this is actually this copyright version from 1976 of the Masonic, Hermetic, Kabbalistic, and Rosicrucian Symbolical Philosophy, Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, etc., etc. This is by Manly P. Hall, 33rd degree. So I'm going to talk, the part I'm going to talk about here today is on the Entered Apprentice. And I'll only go so far if I consider anything to be a violation of, I tend to keep some very strict boundaries, gentlemen, so I hope you will bear with me. But with that in mind, there are three grand steps in the unfoldment of the human soul before it completes the dwelling place of the spirit. Of course, Manly started off breakfast with a nice, easy opening statement. Man, these have been called respectively youth, manhood, and old age, or as the Mason would say, the entered apprentice, the fellow craft, and the master builder. All life passes through these three stages, these three grand stages of human consciousness. They can be listed as the man on the outside looking in, the man going in, and the man inside. The path of human life is governed, as all things are, by the laws of analogy. And as at birth we start our pilgrimage through youth, manhood, and old age, so the spiritual consciousness of man in his cosmic path of unfoldment passes from unconsciousness to perfect consciousness in the grand lodge of the universe. Before the initiation of the Entered Apprentice degree can be properly understood and appreciated, certain requirements must be considered. Not merely those of the physical world, but also those of the spiritual world. The Mason must realize that his true initiation is a spiritual and not a physical ritual, and that his initiation into the living temple of the spiritual hierarchy regulating Freemasonry may not occur until years after he has taken the physical degree, or spirituality, he may be a grand master before he comes into the world. There are probably few instances in the history of Freemasonry where the spiritual ordination of the aspiring seeker took place at the same time as the physical initiation. because the true initiation depends upon the cultivation of certain soul qualities, an individual and personal matter that it, which is left entirely to the volition of the mystic mason, and which he must carry out in silence and alone. The court of the tabernacle of the ancient Jews was divided into three parts: the outer court, the holy place, and the most holy of holies. These three divisions represent the three grand divisions of human consciousness. The degree of entered apprentice is acquired when the student signifies his intention to take the rough ashlar wood which he cuts from the quarry and prepares for the truing of the fellowcraft. In other words, the first degree is really one of preparation. It is a material step dealing with material things, for all spiritual life must be raised upon a material foundation. 7 is the number of the entered apprentice as it relates to the 7 liberal arts and sciences, and these are the powers with which the entered apprentice must labor before he is worthy to go onward into the more elevated and advanced degrees. They are much mistaken who believe that they can reach the spiritual planes of nature without first passing through and molding matter into the expression of spiritual power. For the first stage in the growth of a master mason is mastery of the concrete conditions of life and the developments of sense centers, which will later become channels for the expression of spiritual truths. All growth is a gradual procedure carried on in an orderly way, masterly way, and as exemplified by the opening and closing of the lodge. The universe is divided into planes, and these planes are divided from each other by the rates of vibration which passed through them. As the spiritual consciousness progresses through the chain, the lower loose connection with it when it's raised itself above their level, until finally only the grandmasters are capable of remaining in session. And unknown even to the master mason, it finally passes back again to the spiritual hierarchy from which it came. Remember, he's talking about a spiritual grandmaster. Action is the keynote of the entered apprentice lodge. All growth is the result of exercise and the intensification of vibratory rates. It is through exercise that the muscles of the human body are strengthened. It is through the 7 liberal arts and sciences that the human mind receives certain impulses, which in turn stimulate internal centers of consciousness. These centers of consciousness, though still greater development, through still greater development, will later give fuller expression to these inner powers. But the entered apprentice has for his first duty the awakening of these powers. And like the youth of whom he is a symbol, his ideals and labors must be tied closely to concrete things. For him, both points of the compasses are under the square. For him, the reasons which manifest through the heart and mind, the two polarities of expression, are darkened and concealed beneath the square which measures the block of bodies. He knows not the reason why. His work is to follow the directions of those whose knowledge is greater than his own, but as the result of the application of energies through action and reaction, he slowly builds and evolves the powers of discrimination and the strength of character, which mark the fellow craft degree. It is obvious that the rough ashlar symbolizes the body. It also represents cosmic root substance, which is taken out of the quarry of the universe by the first expressions of intelligence, and molded by them into ever finer and more perfect lines, until finally it becomes the perfect stone for the builder's temple. Next time we're together, we'll continue on. A deeper way of understanding the work of the initiatory process, the initiatory entrance into our great order. The experience, perhaps the greatest secret of all, is the experience. What did it feel like the first time you held your child? What did it feel like when you were watching a close friend pass away? What was the most joyous experience in your life? How do words measure compared to that experience? Is that the secret everybody is striving to find from us? How can we say it? Several liberal arts and sciences revealed a deeper understanding of the human condition. I'm well convinced that the poets and composers are describing and releasing things, revealing things about the human condition that we couldn't achieve otherwise. And we need to be grateful. We can't exercise that. We can't be influenced by them unless we explore them. We do know that the minds of musicians are affected by the music. The architecture of the human brain is affected. God, to me, it seems, is a verb, not a noun, proper or improper. That's our Buckminster Fuller. We are all going to heaven, and Van Dyck is of the company. The great painter Thomas Gainsborough said that. Galileo Galilei said, "But it does move." That's attributed to Galileo after his recantation that the earth moves around the sun in 1632. He said, he had to say it didn't, that the earth moved around that the sun moved around us and we were the center. He had to say that, but here he goes, but it does move. Of course he did. Earth's the right place for love. And I don't know where it's likely to go better. Most of the change we think we see in life is due to truths being in and out of favor. Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me. Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. I should have called it something you somehow happen to deserve. Someday the world will end in fire, some say in ice. Happiness makes up in height for what it lacks. Finish with Robert Frost. And you're full of Robert Frost? Can we do worse? Man, I'm sorry, brethren. I'm sitting here with the material on the history of Freemasonry in Canada. Apologize. Ran out. I hope you'll join me again. I look forward to it. Won't be quite such a gap the next time. We need to get back together. We have things to say. And in the meantime, commit to random acts of the sign of kindness. May the great architect of the universe be careful and watch over you and yours. It's a distinct pleasure to play you out with a little bit of Gershwin, Brother George Gershwin.